We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Adam, are you willing to play the Tar Heels in a football game? Can you get some guys together? Let's go play.
We have very steep demands involving box lunches.
Oh, well, things didn't work out the way the Tar Heels wanted. And so, of course, we know there was no game this past weekend and no game this upcoming weekend. And we thought, well, let's just go right to the source. So Bubba Cunningham's going to join us here in just a second. We're gonna play that interview here early in the show. Then we'll come back out of there and talk about it here in a minute. Plus, we have a terrific interview with former Tar Heel quarterback, current cornerback coach at FIU. That is Bryn Renner. Looking forward to talking to Bryn. I think you'll enjoy that. Adam has a semblance of a list. And Adam, we're going to invite Mr. Goosehonkers in today and have a little story time too.
You've got to unleash all the hounds when things don't go your way. You just got to keep scrapping.
Yeah. Hashtag grind. That's what we're on here. Quick reminder before we get to any of that, that you don't need to let your outside chores or projects cause you to miss any Tar Heel action this season, the next time that action occurs. Let Ellis Tractor help make short work of them, from normal yard maintenance to larger projects as well. Ellis Tractor has the machine for you. Visit ellistractorusa.com to see the difference. Ellis Tractor, what's it about for you? Adam, anything you would like to say before we run the Bub interview and then we talk about the Bub interview after people hear it?
Well, I think we should just, in case people miss the whole thing, as you know, Carolina didn't play Charlotte this past Saturday because Charlotte had some contact tracing issues. So then the Tar Heels said, well, that's okay because we, the Tar Heels, have a bye next week on Saturday, September 26th, and we are going to attempt to schedule a game for that day. Well, that didn't occur.
Yeah.
And then the Tar Heels came out on Sunday night, Monday, and basically said, hey, it didn't work out. So this is the context to why it didn't work out.
Okay. So we're going to get to that conversation with Bubba. Then we'll come back. Adam and I will talk a little bit about it. Then everything else that we talked about. Bryn Renner, story time, Adam's list. Off we go. But first, let's get to our conversation with Tar Heel AD Bubba Cunningham.
It's a Carolina Insider podcast, so Bubba Cunningham is here with us.
Absolutely.
This is now a three-person podcast. Bubba makes regular appearances we have dramatically increased his appearance fee.
Well, I sincerely appreciate it. My frequent flyer miles are absolutely going up. I cannot wait to see what the prize gift is at the end of the season. This is going to be fantastic. I can't wait.
The only problem is once you have the knives and the belt buckle, we don't really have anything like a valuable gift certificate to service merchandise like they used to give out on Wheel of Fortune is all we got.
I know, and I still have my S&H green stamps. That was way before your guys' time, but I'm still collecting those. I think they're going to come back with my bell bottoms.
We do have we have some Skittles over there. We have a Bill Leslie guitar pick, but those are pretty.
We're not giving that away. Let's see how this appearance goes before we give away
the big stuff. Bubba, obviously it was a busy weekend for you guys. We spoke late last week about the Charlotte cancellation. I know you were aggressively trying to figure out a way to get a game on the schedule for this upcoming Saturday, but unfortunately it did not work. Take us through everything that's been going on with you.
You're right. Unfortunately, it did not work. We really wanted to play a game this past week, and this coming week, actually. And it was very disappointing that we couldn't play Charlotte. You know, I think that was a great game for us. We have some games with them scheduled going forward, and it just didn't work out. And so Rick Steinbacher really did a ton of work calling everybody, watching the there's a scheduling program that has everybody's games, who they're playing, who they might be playing, and worked with Dave Brown, former ESPN executive. And he scoured the country looking for games to play. There were a couple that were available that didn't make sense for us, and we thought we had a couple that we could play, and it didn't make sense for them. And so, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into it. It's your availability, how much you can pay, and is someone willing to come and willing to travel. Ideally, we wanted somebody local that could bus, and it just did not work out, unfortunately, this for the next weekend.
How do you balance? It would be good, I assume, for the football team to play a game, obviously, but how do you balance that with, is this financially right for the overall athletic department, especially at this time?
Well, that's a great question, but we did have a little bit of money left in the budget to pay Charlotte to come. So if we could have gotten a game for that amount of money, then we were certainly willing to do that. Or start a home and home. Start the home game at our place, we would return the game. But a couple of the schools that we talked to were asking for such an outrageous amount of money, given that we have no fans, it made no sense at all. And so it's a little disingenuous for those people to say, well, geez, we should have played. Well, it was absurd what they were asking for. And not mentioning any names.
We can mention names now.
You guys do that when I leave.
Bubba, so there is another open date later in the schedule for Carolina. Everybody in the ACC had multiple open dates this year, I assume, just for this reason, to have some flexibility within the schedule. Is there the possibility that that date could be filled or that the schedule may be shuffled in the future?
We will definitely try to fill that date. We will really try to play 11 games, 10 conference, 1 non-conference. So we will book a game for November in pencil. Because if a conference game happens to get canceled or moved, we need that date for the conference game.
Sure.
So we have to be very flexible, and we have to have a great partner with us that, hey, we'd like to play you. If it doesn't work out, we'll play you in a different year, or somebody that's very flexible at the back end as well. So we need a friend to come forward and work with us on that.
I think one thing that people misunderstand is, well, if Carolina would have played a game this coming Saturday, they would have made some money because it would have been on TV. Is that actually how it works? Can you kind of walk us through that?
Well, the conference would have generated some money for the league if we have a game televised. So that part is true, and we would get that at the back end when we get our normal distribution from the conference. So with 11 games, 10 conference, 1 non-conference for 15 teams, we can do okay financially this year. So when we lose a game, we are going to take a hit because we don't have that appearance. So that's why we really do want to make that game up. We hope it's a quality game. And although the quality of the game really isn't as important as playing a game.
So now that Virginia and Virginia Tech are playing on December 12th, but I know the ACC championship game is scheduled for either December 12th or December 19th. With them playing on the 12th, does that open the 12th for you under the premise that, well, the ACC championship game must be on the 19th?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know if we've moved that game yet or not. We'd have another call tomorrow. It is available for the 19th, and it might be that we're just going to continue to schedule games, and if they're not in contention for it, maybe we'd keep it on the same date. I don't know the answer to that. We will see. But we want to keep the championship date available for us.
Yeah, that's right. So other sports played this week in Chapel Hill for the first time that Olympic sports have had action. How did everything go on that front for Carolina?
Everything went really well. We won all three games. It was fantastic.
Most important. Yeah.
I tell you, Thursday when the women played, I mean, it was raining terrible, particularly in the second half. But the team played great. They really came out, fired up, scored a couple early goals, and went on to win. I think it was 4-1 was the final score, and that was terrific. Field hockey got their 47th in a row. Men's soccer won on Sunday night. So logistically, it was great, and it was really great to see kids back out enjoying what they love to do. They've been training for so long to finally get to play. I tell you, I don't think the soccer team even knew it was raining.
Bubba, how's all this going? I mean, just in general, with athletes starting to compete again, the multiple tests per week now with football, how is all that from the Tar Heel side of things going, in your opinion?
It's going as well as it can. Everyone has been really flexible. They have been as positive as they can be, but it's a challenge. Our athletic trainers are stressed. Our students are stressed.
Yeah.
Our strength and conditioning coaches. And we're beginning to really feel the testing protocols with, now we have five teams competing right now, and testing those students three times a week is a lot. And it's going to be even more challenging next semester. You know, we're going to soon, when football is over, we're going to have 27 teams in January competing.
Good gracious.
And so I did the math on it the other day. I mean, it's staggering. If we have 700 student athletes being tested three times a week, now it's not going to be for the entire second semester, but that's a lot of tests. So if anybody is rooting for therapies and vaccines to come quickly, it's me. It's me. And Dr. Fauci, you know, he need to get that little hamster on that wheel. That thing's got to go. And we need something quickly.
I know the Big Ten has talked a lot about this, about the daily testing for football players, at least. Do you think that is even in the cards for the ACC right now?
Not unless it's a different test. The nasal test, the saliva test, I mean, those are all still very expensive tests. And quite frankly, daily testing, You know, what's it doing? I mean, the testing three times a week is really a challenge to do right now. If there's a test that is more efficient, and by doing it every single day makes sense that you do it, then we take a look at it. But right now, three times a week is really significant.
As the schools and conferences that said they were out a couple of months ago have sort of trickled back in over the last week or two, have any of them called you to say, hey, what's it like to actually have to do this and kind of get advice? And if so, what have you told them?
Well, be patient, be flexible. And you know, they're the ones that are basically doing that. So I have talked to some other friends in the industry, and it is a real challenge for them because they had made a decision they weren't going to do something. Now they're going to try to do something. So they are kind of restarting the car. And it's going to take them a little bit of while to build up. They're going to have some bumps in the road, as we did. And what generally happens is you see the spike, it goes up, everyone gets nervous, and then it seems to level off and maybe even come down, and then you can kind of get on with your business. So that's what I've been telling them is, yes, we have had some problems, we experienced it, we got through it, and it'll be the same for you. And it's going to be the same for all of our sports, you know. So when the basketball start, and volleyball's now starting this week, we're going to see some challenges for them as well. So it'll just be what we have seen for the past 3 weeks, more of it, more often, more sports, more students. But, you know, knock on wood, as long as everyone gets mild cases, then we're doing okay.
Certainly a challenging time for Bubba Cunningham and everybody else in college athletics. Bubba, thank you for your time, and look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thank you. I appreciate it, and I can't wait for the end of the year for those prizes.
That interview and our upcoming interview with Bryn Renner, brought to you by the Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina. Texting while driving takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. And at highway speeds, it's like driving the length of a football field with your eyes closed. Trusted Choice Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina want you to stay safe behind the wheel. Put down that phone while driving. Let's have a hands-free NC. To learn more, visit TrustedChoice.com and find an agent near you.
Can I just tell you that whenever you read that, I picture, like, the entire state putting their hands up in the air and waving them as if they do not care.
Yeah. We're hands-free here.
Hands-free NC!
These hands are free. They are focused on driving. That's it. Hands-free NC. Adam, let's talk about the game-free NC, which is what the Tar Heels are right now. I think Bubba laid it out pretty well there. I mean, I think it's easy to say from the sideline, well, how could they not get a game? They should have gotten a game. But there's just more that goes into it than just saying, hey, Team X, you don't have a game next week. We don't have a game next week. Let's play. It's harder than that.
Well, like many things to do with being an athletic director, you can do it if cost is no object. If your only goal is let's play a football game, that can happen. You may bankrupt your athletic department.
Yeah.
And potentially not be able to test your student athletes to the level that you have to comply with the ACC, but you could play a football game. The issue is you have to play a football game while also balancing all these other things. And I think, as he talked about, it's not either play Saturday or you don't get to play an 11th game. There's still a little cushion there, although as he very clearly stated, it's a complicated cushion.
Well, and I do think, from what we've learned from our inside sources, Adam, that the Tar Heels, they were deep in discussions in having a game. I think when you learn a little more about the finances and that particular game was going to be more than twice what the Tar Heels had originally budgeted to pay a non-conference team to come here and play, that's when things get a little more complicated in our current... Well, that makes things complicated anytime, but particularly in our current environment.
And when you, the big school, is offering possibly more than just one game.
Yeah, a home and home, and to come to your much smaller place.
Right. At that point, you start to wonder, are they just trying to hold someone hostage, essentially, not literally but figuratively,
right?
And
I'm glad you clarified that.
Yeah. And that's when it's good that someone like me is not the athletic director, because then you can just say, hold on guys, I'm not sure this makes sense. Right. As much as I want to see Sam Howell throw the ball, be it on a Thursday or any day, I don't think this is right for the athletic department. This doesn't make sense. I've put a lot of effort into making this happen, and I've worked the phones, but I think as of right now, this just is not going to happen. And I need to use my common sense and wisdom of leadership to make that call.
Yeah. I tell you, it's a long time between games, though, for the Tar Heels. I feel like it's already been a long time since they've played, and we've got a long way to go still.
Well, I think that's the tricky part, is the football side. Like,
right.
That's the athletic department side. The football side, this is very far from ideal.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like another season opener, I feel like, because there's so much time in between the two games.
It's almost like you got an NFL preseason game, and then you had a couple weeks, and then you're going to start the regular season.
So we'll see. Carolina... next scheduled action is October 3rd at Boston College. BC played this past Saturday, defeated Duke in Durham 26-6, and Boston College hosts Texas State this upcoming Saturday, and then it would be the Tar Heels after that. BC defense looked pretty good, gave up just 351 yards to Duke, 6 points, forced 5 turnovers, a couple of them in the red zone. Of course, a new coach there at Boston College, Jeff Hafley, who had been the defensive coordinator at Ohio State last several years. He's got his first head coaching job. We'll talk more about that game several weeks from now when it's actually going to get played. One other thing, though, Adam, to your point, it seems like Carolina will very much try to fill that other open date, which is before Thanksgiving. But Bubba made the excellent point of that you may have to have that date back if a conference game ends up having to get adjusted. And a conference game in this, in this scenario is more important than a non-conference game. And so that would be a tenuous. Hey, we want to play you on this day, assuming we don't have to move another game to this day later on in the season.
I've tried this tactic back in my dating life, and I have to tell you that it doesn't always turn out very well.
Look, I'd love to go to dinner with you. Let's pencil in a date, but I'm going to talk. There's a possibility that I may end up going with someone else on that same day, and if that happens, I'll let you know.
It's a date, unless I get a better offer that I feel more compelled to do, in which case, it's off.
That's a... I think he said that the Tar Heels needed a friend. Yes, they do. They need a friendly team to come.
But I need you to firmly commit. You can't back out. Like you're in, right? And I'm kind of in, pretty much, unless something happens.
What a weird year, Adam.
I think it'll be interesting to see what Mack Brown and company do with this week.
Yeah.
Because the Tar Heels were off this past Saturday, 3 days ago. But now you've got another off week coming up, which traditionally you would treat the off week a certain way, but you would like to get some of those younger players some reps. So do you have a light scrimmage? But depth is so important this year. You just never know when a position group might be depleted. So can you afford to take that chance? And that's the decisions they'll have to make this week.
Okay. We've got our conversation with Bryn Renner, unless you have something else, Adam.
No.
We have our conversation with Bryn Renner coming up, but before we do that, let's get to our champion of the gridiron from this past weekend. But we have to look elsewhere than the gridiron, of course. It's where we highlight MVPs from a previous game, brought to you by UNC Healthcare, dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds and to help keep you in the game and at your very best. You can see their lineup at unchealthcare.org/sports. And Adam, I say we go to women's soccer. Of course, Anson Dorrance he joined us this past show last Friday, and the Tar Heels go 2-0 on the weekend, beating both Wake Forest in a monsoon and then Virginia Tech as well. 4-1 over Wake, then 1-0 against Virginia Tech. So hot start to the season for Anson Dorrance and his Tar Heels.
And as Bubba mentioned, great also to see men's soccer go out there and get a win. Field hockey went out there and got a win. Well, they played, so you know they won. And, of course, as Jones just said, women's soccer got a pair of wins. So it was nice to feel quasi-normal for a weekend of Tar Heel sports. Even as you were missing some events, others got going.
Okay, Bryn Renner, former Tar Heel quarterback, now recruiting coordinator and cornerbacks coach for Florida International, FIU. Of course, that is where Butch Davis is the head coach. We talked to Bryn about his new role, about Butch and time at Carolina and all kinds of good stuff. And you're going to enjoy this interview because Bryn Renner is a very likable guy. And I think that's going to come across. So let's get to our conversation with Bryn. Come back, Adam's List, story time, and more here on the Carolina Insider.
We had to check ourselves, Jones, before we address this next guest, because we're used to calling him Bryn Renner, ace Tar Heel quarterback. He's now known as Coach Renner, and I would appreciate you addressing him appropriately.
It is crazy to me that every time we speak to former Tar Heels, I feel like that they've just stepped away from Carolina's campus and they're still like the youngster that left here.
Right.
But instead, we've got old grizzled veteran and now Coach Bryn Renner. Bryn, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Adam and Jones. I really appreciate it. I miss you guys, that's for sure.
How did you become an adult, Bryn? You're supposed to stay like college age your whole life.
I tell you what, you know, coaching, you know, takes you back to the young years. We just got off the practice field, and I'm like, you know what? I can still hop around a little bit, and I was throwing the ball and throwing to my corners, and so it was a lot of fun. So I don't feel like I'm old yet, but I think I'm getting there. My knees are getting a little bit sore from all the playing. So,
Bryn is the cornerbacks coach at Florida International. Bryn, how big of an adjustment has it been? As you just said, you are now supposed to throw the ball to the cornerbacks after a lifetime of trying to keep the ball away from them.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is my fourth year with Coach Davis at FIU, and I spent the first two as the recruiting coordinator, and then, you know, obviously I'm going to my second year coaching the corners, and I couldn't have asked for a better, you know, understanding of the defensive side of the football. You know, when I interviewed for the job for coach after, you know, the 2018 season, And I sat down, and it was a long interview process. And you know, he grinded me really, really good. And he told me when he hired me, he said, "This is going to be the best thing for your career." And so I really have come full circle with kind of understanding the full grand scheme of things of college football. Obviously, doing the recruiting and obviously developing, a rapport with the recruits that you have in the high school level, especially being the great state of Florida. And recruiting those guys for 2 years and signing the number one class and then going over the corner side and coaching those guys. And they've taught me more than I needed to learn.
Brent, how did you get hooked back up with Butch Davis? Of course, you played for Coach Davis some here at Carolina. How did you two get back together?
Yeah, it's a great story, Jones. And in 2016, I got cut by the Steelers, and I went to work at Austin Peay with Will Healy, actually the head coach at Charlotte now. And, Wes Satterfield was my graduate assistant when I was at Carolina for Coach Shoup. And we linked back up because I knew I wanted to get in coaching and I had a passion for it. And then, we go through our season and I really had a great time. And it was kind of a great break for me from getting cut from the NFL five times and your dream getting snatched away from you. But you pick another dream back up. You know, my dad was a high school coach. And then, Coach Davis gets the job in November and gave me a call and said, "Hey, I want you to come aboard. And I don't know what capacity yet, but hey, come on down." And I haven't left yet. And he hasn't gotten rid of me yet. So it's been a great to kind of reconnect with Coach Davis. He was so big in my career and, a second father figure to me, recruited me out of Virginia. And, spent some good time with him for 3 years. And it was a great time. So it's been great to be with Coach going on year four. And we've had great success. We've had, three bowl games in the last, years we've been here. So hopefully you get a fourth this year and got a lot of work to do to get that.
Bren, how does the relationship change when you are a player for Coach Butch Davis as opposed to when you are on the same staff and a staff mate of Coach Butch Davis?
I feel like it hasn't changed much, Adam. I think it's the same. We were at practice today and it's, "Hey, get your corners right. Hey, cover two right there." So I feel like it's just almost added pressure because, you don't want to let him down the same as you didn't want to let him down when you played quarterback for him. And it's kind of like I tell everybody, it's kind of like playing Madden now. You go from playing quarterback and then you have the remote controls and you can't really go inflict your own will on the game. So you can't go throw a touchdown and make up for a mistake. You got to kind of coach your guys to do that for you. But it's been a blast. I mean, he's an unbelievable teacher. I'm one of the best, I've been around and will ever be around of, recruiting, evaluating, and also coaching on the field. And so I've grown so much. But to answer your question, nothing's changed. I'm still getting chewed out and hopefully I'm doing a good job for him.
Brent, obviously things did not end the way Coach Davis wanted them to end here in Chapel Hill, and you were a part of all of that. You were in the middle of all of that as a player. Is that simply water under the bridge at this point for him, or do you have a sense that that is still something that you guys discuss, or has that just not come up at all?
No, I think he he would even say this. He had a great time at North Carolina, and I think for me personally, we talk about it from time to time, but it's great memories. I think. He accomplished a lot, in his career there. And I think we did as a program of, getting it jump started and getting it where it needed to be. And then obviously, some things happened, but we learned and grew and we moved forward. And, I think the biggest thing is you learn from them and you still are able to have a good time in this game of college football and look, things happen. And, obviously we can look back and look at that, but we really don't. We kind of move forward and go forward. So I think we're all going to be Tar Heels, for the rest of our lives, and he feels some of that as well. But I think for me personally, it was a really, a growing experience. And I can probably say this. I went through a lot of things in my career at a young age of dealing with the media during that stuff and the injuries, and it really grew me up that where I can now – teach our kids, through things that are right and wrong to do in this profession, for sure.
You had to stand there, as you just mentioned, and answer a whole bunch of questions during that time that I'm guessing a lot of times you didn't even really know the answer to, or sometimes even know what was being talked about. What was that like now that you look back on it, having to do that every day when really you just wanted to throw the football?
Yeah, and I remember, I look back from time to time. Once you're in the moment, you're just kind of living day by day, and you don't really, you know, understand the grand scheme of things. Because like you said, you just want to play football and play quarterback that you dreamed about doing since you were little. And but now looking back, I think it was a great growing experience for me. Because like you said, I'm 21 years old trying to start my first game of college football and then answering the questions. But it grew me up to be a man. Obviously, you know, to have the pressure of that season, but also the seasons going forward with the new coaching staff. And Coach Fedora did a great job coming in and establishing that after Coach left, and Everett came in and did a great job. But over those course of the years, to get in front of a microphone every weekend and week out, and you know, sometimes talk about football, sometimes talk about things that were out of your control, I think you grow up and you learn really quick. And I think that was very helpful for my growth now that I am a coach. And going through the whole process, but being a Tar Heel was a great experience for me.
Bryn, you know what it's like to be the quarterback at the University of North Carolina. Have you been viewing Sam Howell with any interest in what he has been able to do here? He of course had such a spectacular freshman year.
Oh, he's been lights out, Jones, and I've actually got a chance to talk to Sam a couple times just on the phone, just because I'm always going to be, you know, part of the gun club, we used to call it, and whoever's the quarterback, no matter what, until I leave this earth, I'll be a fan of, and he's phenomenal. I mean, really polished and poised, and I was able to catch, you know, a lot of the games last year. Could we play at night at FIU, and so I caught most of the game, especially the one versus Clemson, and I was really impressed with just his poise and presence. And for a freshman to be able to do that, I know his birthday was yesterday, but, you know, just to have that demeanor. I know, you know, TJ and I talk about it all the time, just to watching him from afar. I mean, his accuracy, composure in the pocket, and the way he leads. I mean, I watched that Miami game a couple times, and the throw he made in the corner, and just, you know, the presence he has just, you know, around the whole campus, it's electric. And he's a really, really special player, and I'm glad he's breaking all my records.
You've still got him on a couple.
Brenda. No, I don't know. He'll get me before he leaves, that's for sure.
I can totally imagine you sitting in the living room of a high school senior and just absolutely blowing him out of the water. What do you feel like you've learned as a recruiter, especially from Butch Davis, who from all accounts is also really good at that? And then what have you also kind of done on your own in that aspect?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you a great story. I was sitting here, and it was, you know, the first year we were here, and I think it was 2017. He knocks on the door, and he goes, "Hey, come with me." And he gives me a binder and says, "Hey, we're going to go through this binder. You're going to be the director of recruiting." I'm like, "What?" And I was just, you know, kind of blown away. And I'm like, "Okay." So we spent about, you know, 5 to 7 hours just teaching me the ins and outs of, you know, obviously, you know, everything that he's done in his past of establishing the Miami program in North Carolina. And, you know, the good thing about being with coaches, we, you know, when he recruited me, I was helping him recruit players that I wanted to play with, the Eric Highsmiths, the Josh Adams, the Dante Page Mosses. And we actually signed a top 15 class back in 2009 when I was getting recruited. So I took it as you're being the quarterback in the leadership role of trying to establish who you want to play with and who's really good for the team. And once you look at it as big picture, you know, I'm watching offensive linemen. I've never watched an offensive lineman in my life as a recruiter. And I spent more time doing that so I could learn and grow. And sitting with him for hours and hours of, hey, we need this kid. And you know, he would be a good complement to this kid. And just kind of evaluating a roster. And I think I didn't really appreciate how much time coaches did that, you know, as a whole. And we were fortunate enough, you know, coaching staff did a great job of signing the number one class my first year in Conference USA, and then signing the number two class the following year. So you learn about, you know, where to send coaches on the road, and just how to make a whole calendar for the whole entire year, where to send coaches to go see games. You know, how do you sit in someone's house and have a conversation, and what are the selling points for our school and our program, and where we need to go. And I learned so much, Adam. It was really critical for me to have those 2 years with Coach. And obviously I'm still the recruiting coordinator as well as coaching the corner. So he hasn't let me go yet. So I think I'm doing okay.
Bryn, what are the selling points of FIU? What are the things that you guys try to make sure that some young man that you're recruiting knows for sure about your school?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is the coaches that you're going to be around. You know, I was really fortunate to have John Shoup and obviously Coach Davis, but also Larry Fedora and Blake Anderson. And I really kind of think that's the person that's going to, you know, carry the weight of your shoulders when you drop your son off at school. And, you know, for the moms and dads, and you guys have both have kids. And I think that's the biggest thing we try to sell is, hey, we're going to take care of your kid, your son, and he's going to be first class in everything that we do. And a lot of people say it, but I truly think we mean that. And, you know, our school is really good in the business program. And we've actually graduated, you know, 98% of our kids that have, you know, we've had in the last 4 years. And obviously we inherited some players from Ron Turner's era as well. And if they want to take that next step, whatever that may be, the NFL or, you know, going to get their first job, they're going to be prepared for it. And we treat, you know, everything we've kind of done is to transform this program into a first-class program. And we've had really good success with 3 bowl games and 2 of those being wins. So it's been, you know, really, really good for our program to get a jump start. And obviously it doesn't hurt being in South Beach in about, you know, 12 minutes from Miami and with the walking distance and things like that. So it's been a blast.
I was going to ask you, so you of course know what the rivalry aspect is up here with Carolina and Duke and State and so close together. You guys in Miami are right next door to each other. There's so many schools in South Florida and Florida in general. What's the atmosphere like there from the college football rivalry aspect with you and so many other places?
Yeah, it's really turned in, you know, since Coach got here, and obviously his ties have helped when he was at Miami. So, you know, last year we went and played him in Marlins Park, and obviously we lucked out and won 30-24. So that was a big win for us. But the atmosphere is, Jones, I mean, I can't tell you enough how much Florida football, and I really didn't understand it until I got down here. And obviously I played with a lot of guys like Giovanni Bernard and Trey Boston that were from Florida. And I remember being in the locker room and they're like, Florida boys, football is just different. And I tell you what, when you come down here, I can probably ask every kid in the Carolina locker room the same thing. Florida football is just different. You know, it means a lot more to these kids. So the electricity comes from their demeanor and their approach to the game. I mean, you look at around the country, how many players, you know, are playing in the NFL from the state of Florida. It's a different type of passion. So that passion is really carried over to our production on the field. You know, it's very electric atmosphere. We play all of our games at night because the heat, you know, it gets really hot down here. Obviously, you guys know when you come down here, you play Miami. But we play them at night, and it's really electric atmosphere. And it's a lot of fun to see the Panthers play football on Saturday nights, I tell you that.
I think what Jones was getting at was he was wondering if he did the games for FIU, if he could do the games in a Speedo.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about right there. Hey, Speedos only down here. If you come to our stadium, there would be no shirts, face paint. I mean, you better wear your swimming trunk and flip-flops, I tell you that.
No, Bryn, we want to grow your team. We want more fans of FIU, not fewer fans.
No doubt. No doubt. We'll put you on the Jumbotron, Jones. That would be a big hit.
Bryn, you touched on your NFL experience a little bit, and I'd be curious to know more about that. What's it like to be right there, but kind of on the edge, and you know you're always just a kind of a breath away from being right where you want to be. How was all that?
Well, looking back, and you know, I just turned 30 in January, and I feel like I'm old because it aged me a little bit. But I got cut 5 times, but I tell everybody all the time I got my PhD in learning about football. And I was around great people. I was around Peyton Manning my first year in 2014. Then go to Baltimore around Joe Flacco and then Philip Rivers and, you know, Ben Roethlisberger at the end and just Marcus Mariota and really good coaches, Mike Tomlin, John Harbaugh, you know, the list goes on and on. Mark Trestman was an offensive coordinator of mine. And I just got so diverse in my learning of how to build a culture and build a team. But also when you're in the midst of it playing, you're really kind of, like you said, on the edge of, hey, cracking the 53 like I was in Baltimore a couple times. And it's nerve-wracking, but then you have a different approach when you're coaching because you handle the kids different. Because you had those feelings, emotions as a player, and I don't know if I would be as good of a coach now if I didn't have that experience of, you know, getting cut and having to tell a walk-on. You know, being on the practice squad was pretty much like a walk-on. And I had those feelings, emotions of dealing with coaches and trying to go out to practice when your job's on the line. And I think it was really, really good experience. And I don't know if I would change the way it went. Probably at the time I would have. But now looking back and being very fortunate to be in the position I am, being a coach at 30 years old and coaching corners and coaching defense, it served me really well. And I just hope I can give back to these kids.
You were also a really good baseball player, weren't you?
Yes, sir. I was.
We just talked to Daniel Bard the other day, and he had been retired for several years, and now he's back in the game in the majors. You've been out of the game for maybe a little longer than Daniel Bard. Is there any chance mm-hmm. that you've still got incredible baseball game and you could go out on the field right now and hit some dingers?
Okay, so we're walking past today, actually, and they're taking BP. FIU's taking BP, and Mervell, Coach Mervell, is a great guy, and I've always been tempted to grab a wood bat and just go over there and take BP. But I know if Matt Harvey – so I'll tell you a quick story. When I went over to play baseball at Carolina, Matt Harvey threw me 98 inside corner. He'll never forget it. I almost put the bat down and told Coach Fox that I was done playing baseball. It was that fast. So if I could just take BP – Adam, I would take BP. I'm not taking any live hacks because I would be 1, 2, 3, and I'd go sit my rear on the bench. But BP would be great. So y'all come at 5 with the hot dogs and popcorn.
Yeah, that's right. Just 65 miles an hour right down the center. You're good to go. Let's do that.
Yeah. Intramural softball would be great for me right now.
All right. So, Brent, I don't want to get super personal, but I think mm-hmm. a lot of people who listen and who might be golf fans – we'll know somebody who's important in your life. How did that relationship Absolutely. Come about?
Well, it's a great story. So, first of all, she's phenomenal, and she makes me a better person every single day. But, you know, it actually happened at the Miami game. So it was November 23rd, and I was walking out to right field, and Aaron Murray, who's a friend of mine who I've known since I was 16, the former quarterback at Georgia, was calling the game for CBS, and there happened to be a very cute blonde girl before the game that was sitting right next to him. Never met her before. Didn't even know she did golf, and I'm a huge golf fan. And she sits there, and I just was like, Aaron was talking. I wasn't really listening, and introduced myself, but I walked away, and I was like, okay, I got to do my job tonight. And so so I go back in the locker room, and I'm like, okay. And then we go to pregame, and obviously there's a baseball. It was a formal baseball field because we're playing at Marlins Park. I went up to her and said, "Hey, if you need to kill time, there might be a hole at the 17-yard line." Jones and Adam, there was no hole there. I just wanted to make sure that she knew that I was still over there. And her being focused and locked in, she didn't really make anything of it. And then, long story short, I ended up calling Aaron and saying, "Hey, can you put in a good word?" We've been kind of together ever since, and it's phenomenal. She does a phenomenal job, and she's a lot better than I am at what she does, and does it in front of a lot more people, and has a lot more charisma, and she makes me a better person. So it's been going really well. I hope she keeps me around.
All right, well, we got to clarify. So it's Amanda, and pronounce her last name for me, Bren.
Balionis.
Balionis. So you will see Amanda almost every week on TV. She does a lot of the kind of golfers coming mm-hmm. off the course interviews after their round. Now, you said mm-hmm. you're a golfer. Do you guys play together? Does she play?
Oh, she plays. She's really good. She doesn't beat me because I'm too much of a competitor. Both you guys know that. I'm one of the most competitive person, I think, around. So I try not to let her beat me, but she's really good. She's come close a couple times. So, we play Torrey Pines. She lives in San Diego, so we're out there a good bit. But she always brings her clubs, and she can play. But we like to have fun, so we don't get too serious and just enjoy the course. But it's a really good time when we play.
Okay, two more questions about this. One, is it weird having a famous girlfriend? And two, is it weird that she's more famous than you, because you've always been the most famous person in the relationship?
I tell you what, she takes a lot of pressure off me. I agree. It's like, we go out and it's like, hey, can we get a picture? And I'm the camera guy. I'm just the guy in the back. I'm just hiding. I'm like, this is great. And she enjoys it. And she's obviously been in spotlight for a lot longer than I have, but she gets more cameras. I mean, I went to Pebble Beach this year with her, and we're walking, and she's like, she took like 9 pictures in a row, and she's like, oh, this is so frustrating. I'm like, no, I love this. Let's keep taking pictures. So I'm kind of, the guy in the background, which I love, and she does a great job. So I hope I continue being the guy in the back. That's perfect with me.
It took 30 years, but Bren has finally come back to the pack with the rest of us camera guys. Yeah.
I'm with you guys. Hey, here we go.
Bren, when you're telling the guys in your meeting room or something at FIU about your time at Carolina, and you're telling them about some of your favorite teammates, who are the teammates who always come up the most, and what are your favorite stories about them?
I'm going to say that all of them were my favorite. And what's really cool about being a Tar Heel is that connection lasts forever. And the guys I played with and the things that we've talked about that we went through as a team, And as and almost a university, I would probably say we're really tough, and it made us stronger. So if you look at the five guys that protected me for 5 years that I was there and practicing in the games, you look at James Hirsch, you look at Jonathan Cooper, you look at Cam Holland, you look at Russell Bodine, you look at Travis Bond, you look at Brennan Williams, and I'm getting goosebumps just saying it because they mean a lot to me. And they protected me for 5 years. And then you look at the running backs, you look at Giovanni Bernard, Dwight Jones, Eric Highsmith, they're still friends of mine. You know, you look at, you know, TJ, and then just the guys, list goes on and on that you played with, and you were there for 5 years. You really, really think back. And I tell my guys this all the time. The friends you have in college football will be your friends for the rest of your lives. I was just talking to Gio the other day about his terrible mustache that he's growing. And he needs to shave that. But I'm very honest about it, you know, and he took it very well. And so that relationship that you have and those memories on the field and off the field will last forever. And, you know, we still talk to this day, and I was fortunate enough to play with James in Baltimore, and that was really cool because you just build those – you build that chemistry, that bond. You know, you talk about more about the workouts that you did and how hard they were than even the games. And so, you know, you sacrificed a lot to be a college football player, and that's something I'll never forget. And it's always great to be a Tar Heel.
Bryn, we talked to Marquise Williams a couple of weeks ago, and he talked a lot about the quarterback room when he was here and how helpful that was for him to learn from you. And then Mitch Trubisky was in that room with him. But I'm interested from your perspective, you had TJ and then Marquise near the end of your career as well. How did you guys make each other better?
Well, I think, you know, we started it with the gun club, and we mean that. And it's just a fraternity of quarterbacks that are willing to do whatever it takes for the other quarterback to be the starter. And we talked about it all the time, even when TJ was mentoring me, because I redshirted my first year, and TJ kind of had a rough junior year. But I remember going into the offseason, and we really spent a lot of time together, not as competitors, and we never saw it as that. And I think the same, Quise would probably say the same. We just wanted to genuinely help each other complete balls and get better, because it's tough to be a quarterback. It really is. One guy gets the ball, and the other one's got to sit there, and you're on deck to be the next maestro. And you know, it's just one of those things that if you don't help each other along the way, it could be a long year, because you're going to make mistakes. You're going to miss a protection. You're going to throw an interception. You're going to have highs and lows throughout the season. But if you don't have that constant guy that's almost just, hey, man, we're going to get this together, and sees a coverage that you didn't see, and you coming off the field getting hit by a three technique in the face, and he's just like, man, great throw right there. It's going to be a long year. So I think that's, you know, something that's special about the Carolina connection of lineage of quarterbacks. And I think that's why we've had success at Carolina, because it's just a lineage. You still call those guys. I still talk to Quise. I still talk to Sam Howell. I still talk to Mitch, because you genuinely want to see those guys grow. And you were in the room with them. And I recruited Mitch. I remember I was on his visit, and now he's having so much success, but that will never change. And I think that's something special that why I truly think that's why Sam's having success, and he wanted to go to Carolina's, because he knew everyone was going to have his back.
If you get the opportunity to come back to Chapel Hill, or you get to bring Amanda back to Chapel Hill and show her around, what are the spots you've got to show off that are important to you or that are meaningful to Bryn Renner as a Tar Heel?
So during spring break, we did kind of the Sam Hunt, what's the song? The hometowns kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I brought her back, and we went to Topo first. You know, had a nice bite to eat and a beverage, and it was a lot of fun. But we took the whole Carolina tour. So we went, obviously saw the new facility and showed her that. But we went to the top of the hill first, and then we had to go to Bob's. That was a staple. And then we walked around the Dean Dome and showed her the whole nine yards. But it's a special place, and obviously my parents still live there. So it's a great place to still call home. And they obviously made it their home. My sister, obviously, you know, coaches the dance team, and she just is having a blast. And so it's a great place to always be home.
Bryn, don't want to keep you too much longer. We appreciate your time today. Tell us what it's like trying to navigate COVID right now as a coach, as a college football program. Carolina was hit with it here recently with losing a game with Charlotte, unfortunately, having to cancel. Mm-hmm. How are you trying to, as a coaching staff, trying to manage all this with your guys?
Well, I think it's the discipline factor, and even more that you have to have as a football player, you have to have it more as a person. And so I think we've tried to do a really good job. Obviously, we lost our first two ball games just to kind of prepare, and we knew this was kind of going to be an issue. But our kids have done a really good job, and I think everybody across the country of being disciplined and wearing your mask and getting tested. We've kind of had the same troubles, you know, as a program. But I think if we stay this course, we're going to be able to get some games in, and I think that's kind of fair to the, for the kids. And obviously, it's just been a trying year for everybody. So we're trying to do the best we can. And kind of copying what other people are doing. So we're calling across the country, hey, how did you handle this? Hey, how are you, you know, handling your players with social distancing in the locker room and off the field and during meetings? So it's been a transition, but I think we refer to it all the time as sudden change. Sudden change in a ball game. If you throw a pick or an interception or get sacked or, you know, you got to punt the football, it's going to be a sudden change, you know, opportunity. So it's an opportunity for us to grow as a program, but also as a country and get more discipline, I think, in a lot of areas.
Bryn Renner definitely has the personality, I think, to be a successful coach. I think you could tell, especially on the recruiting side, even in that conversation, you could tell, and I think you said it in a question, that you could just envision him talking to a young high school player and the parents and being just somebody that they would really gravitate to. Seems like a guy who's got a bright future.
And I think someone who is committed enough to coaching that he didn't just sit around and say, well, I'm only going to coach quarterbacks.
Right.
No, he wanted to get into coaching however would best benefit his career. So he's moved to defense. As he said, Butch Davis told him it would benefit his career, and I think it probably eventually will. And so it'll be interesting to see what his next step from there would be.
I know we've said this before, and we talked about it when the Tar Heels had a tough year or two at the quarterback spot. But it's pretty impressive the line of quarterbacks that the Tar Heels have had from, you know, the late or the mid-2000s on, where you go from T.J. Yates to Bryn Renner to Marquise Williams to Mitch Trubisky, now Sam Howell. I mean, you've had some really good players there.
Especially when you don't think of Carolina football as having produced – many professional prospects at that position. There was at one point the stat that no Carolina quarterback had started a game maybe in the NFL.
Right.
And that stat has just been obliterated in the last decade or so.
Adam, I know you've been working hard to get a list put together. Are you prepared to talk about said list?
What kind of lazy so-and-so would not have a list?
That's a good question. So that means it's list time.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
Michael Gaskins has emailed us a couple times mentioning that he was expanding the Roadhouse Challenge and was watching Cobra Kai on Netflix. I, too, have now finished both seasons of Cobra Kai.
Wow.
Jones, I'm going to tell you just one fact about Cobra Kai, hashtag no spoilers, and you decide if you think it's awesome or not.
Okay.
Season 2 ends with the slow, classy version of Cruel Summer by Bananarama.
Wow. Adam, it was like all of your favorite things coming together at once.
I really feel like Ralph Macchio had listened to the pod, and he thought, how can we end this in a way that both tugs at your heartstrings, mm-hmm. makes you a little nostalgic, and makes you wondering what's coming next? We're going to slow down Cruel Summer. It's a cruel
There's one thing that we know is going to bring you back in. It'll be a slowed down version of this 80s hit.
Well, I got to tell you, I remember when it first came out on the fancy YouTube, whatever that was called. Remember, it was going to, Cobra Kai was going to be on YouTube's premium thing that doesn't exist anymore.
Oh.
And so they gave you the first episode for free. And I watched that first episode and I thought, this is all right. It's pretty good. It walks a very fine line between cheesy and just enough nostalgia.
That's kind of like the pod.
Yeah, very similar. I think that's why I like it. There is a fight between teenage girls in season two that is more intense than anything in Roadhouse.
Like an actual fight?
Yes. Mm. Hair is pulled. People are thrown down steps.
Mm. That doesn't sound like it was a sanctioned fight.
No holds barred. Cobra Kai. Your little tiny calculator got a lot of attention.
Oh. Yeah, where is that tiny? Here it is. It's easy to lose. Here it is.
Mark Franklin thought that maybe because you put the picture up on Twitter of the little baby calculator next to a bottle of, was it Coke or Diet Coke?
It was Coke Zero.
Coke Zero, proud sponsor of everything to do with the Tar Heels.
Yeah.
He thought maybe you should call your calculator the Coculator.
Yeah, I like that. Todd Phillips said I was being cheap. No, I wasn't being cheap and getting this. Now, was it a financially sound deal? Yes, it was. However, I mean, I wanted a smaller calculator. I wanted a.
That's what you got.
As I said, I wanted a portable calculator. These are hard to come by these days. It was just a little smaller than I was anticipating. But it still works.
As far as we know.
Yeah.
You may get to test it at a game one day. King Jones said that you should refer to that as Lil Casio.
I got to tell you, I kind of like that. But I also wonder if we should go the other way and call it something hilarious, like about how big it is when it really isn't big. Mm. You know what I mean?
Like when, like if it's a real big guy and you call him Slim.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Or like a guy's like 7'2" and you call him Shorty.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I wonder if we could swing the opposite way.
The Gigantolator.
Yes.
Speaking of King Jones, he's on that hashtag grind trying to get to the 100% club. He's not there yet. He wants to make sure he's not making a false claim, but he's at the point in pod history where he's hearing a lot about the pod shake, and he went and got a pod shake and said, it's awesome. No surprise there.
Yeah.
Chocolate and double Oreo. That's what you need for a pod shake. Bradley Cox tweeting us again from what appears to be the ground zero of Hallmark Christmas movies.
Yes.
He, as you know, lives in the neighborhood where they're filming USS Christmas, one soon to be a box office smash in the mold of Cobra Kai. He has old pictures of his next door neighbor's yard filming Christmas in Conway. Mm. Conway. I'm surprised they didn't come out and ask him for $1 million for taking the picture in 2013. And he also saw Andy Garcia.
Wow.
That's a big star.
It's like they made a Ferris wheel in this person's house. In the yard.
Right, yeah.
Very Christmassy for sure.
Yeah. So, Bradley, just keep the good hot tips coming. Sean Patrizzi with a very hurtful tweet.
Yeah, he really laid some law down on you.
Adam needs to defend his love of the inferior Chicago deep dish style pizza. I understand there might be some sentimental value there, but that's the only defense. What about deep dish goodness Giordano's sauce with meatballs and a whole lot of cheese? What about that as my defense, Sean?
I'll eat either of the two.
Yeah, you don't have strong feelings on this.
I don't care at all.
I don't, like, I'll eat either also. But if you put a piece of Chicago style and a piece of New York style in front of me, I'm taking Chicago. And I think part of that is because it's so hard to do correctly. There is a place in Holly Springs that has good Chicago style pizza. I'll just say that. But other than that, most people who do Chicago style outside of Chicago, not as good. Giordano's the best. Pequod's number two, if you're in Chicago. Two more things. Number one, the Tar Heels' next football opponent, we hope, is Boston College.
Yes.
Do you follow their official football Twitter account?
No, but I think I know what you're going to bring up.
Well, Boston College defeated Duke on Saturday.
Yes.
And then official Boston College football Twitter tweeted, +6 LOL.
Yeah.
Which I assume...
It's going right to the betting line there.
Is a reference to the point spread on the game. Is that where we are at this point in college sports?
Yeah.
I guess maybe we are. Boston College is there.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, certainly gambling on sports has been around for a while, Adam. And it is becoming, in the professional leagues, much more regulated and normalized. It's still not quite as normalized at the college level as you can understand.
Well, that's your official Twitter account. The voice of the program acknowledging the point spread that you don't want your players to acknowledge or certainly participate in,
right,
in any way.
Yeah.
I have to think perhaps that person was just subtly reminded that wasn't a great idea.
Is it still up?
I think so. It was when I was making my list. Mm. I was surprised to see that.
Yeah.
Now, the last thing on our list, on my list, relates to our interview with Anson Dorrance that you either saw on the Thursday video pod or the Friday audio pod, one of the many pods. He mentioned he does a book club with his team.
Yes.
Should we do a pod book club? I think this might be more of like a summer thing. But what if we read like a coach's life and talked about it on the pod?
Yes.
I don't feel like you're jumping in on this.
Well, I do think that's a good idea. I think the best part of that idea was it's a summertime thing.
Oh, it's definitely a summertime thing. Yeah. Or unless we get in a long stretch here with no games.
Right. Yeah. Or, yeah, if we start getting some contact tracing that slows things down.
Right.
By the way, contact tracing's hard to say. I had to say it a lot on interviews last. I half the time said contract, and then I'd be like, contact.
Well, eventually we'll get to the point where we can just abbreviate it CT.
Yeah.
CT got them.
Had some CT problems.
Yeah.
No, I'm down for that, but yes, definitely in the summer.
Yeah. Well, I think we should only do it if people would like to do it.
Yeah.
Like if pod listeners would like reading Carolina Way or Coach's Life or something like that, and then we discuss it on a couple of pods, then I think that would be fun. But if they're all sitting there going, what I'd really rather have is a Roadhouse Challenge.
Sure.
Then let the people have what they want.
Just a couple things, and then we'll get to the story time. Rusty Sebastian sent us the Apple Watch version that has the handy tip calculator on there. Well, sorry that I don't have a fancy watch that has a tip calculator on there.
I don't have the Apple Watch, but I do. The tip button is nice to have, I would think.
John Howell says, are we familiar with the quick access to the calculator on your phone? It works even when the phone is locked, and you can put it, save some time versus looking for the app. You can personalize what's on that main screen, like flashlight, alarms, etc. I am aware that that exists.
Did you upgrade your phone to iOS 14?
Yes.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, I've gotten heckled quite a bit at my home because I did not. So does that mean you have widgets? And if so, can you tell me what they are?
Yes, I have them, but I haven't really done anything with them. They're all over here right now.
What? So what is that?
They're just big things that show you things.
Well, right now I have the little things that show me things. Why would I want them to be a larger size?
Well, and here's the other thing. They're trying to make this a whole deal about, hey, look, we organized your apps for you. Guess what? I already have my apps organized. I'm like the most organized app person there is. So your update to organize my apps hasn't affected my life at all. It's actually made it more, it's made it worse.
Yeah, I'm in charge of organizing my apps. I don't need you to do that.
The podcast thing is now confusing too. It's
what?
The podcast app is.
Oh, I don't want to be confused by that. I use that one a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not updating. That does it. That does it.
It's organized it all differently now.
Oh, no.
It's harder to find.
Get back to me on iOS 15.
Got a long way to go.
Yep.
Okay. Terrell Joy said, when we were talking about the calculator, he says he thinks the M plus is for saving a number to memory, and then M minus is for deleting that saved number, but he hasn't used it in more than 25 years. Why would I want to save a number?
Like,
why would I want that?
Yeah, wouldn't you just write it down on your sheet of paper?
Yeah.
Where you were doing your scratch calculations?
Yeah. I'll dip my quill in the ink, and I'll scratch it down on my parchment. And then I will roll it up, and the raven will take it to its intended recipient.
I vaguely think maybe I've heard of that before, but I'm quite sure I've never
used it. This is the biggest rat. I don't need any of the, just give me the numbers.
So you're saying Lil Casio could have been even smaller?
No, don't you say anything negative about Lil Casio, which is his name now. It's official. We're not going the opposite. We're not swinging it all the way the other direction. Little C. Don't mess with little C.
Are there any buttons that you would replace those buttons you don't use with?
I don't have a lot of surface space, honestly. No, just make my numbers a little bigger.
You know what button was very important to me in about fourth and fifth grade, but I haven't thought about since then? The square root button. Mm. When's the last time you had to figure a square root?
That's a good question.
I never do that when I'm doing stats. Oh, you're telling me that Javonte Williams gained 113 yards? Let's see if that's a natural square root.
Adam, the Maui Invitational is going to be in Asheville.
Yes.
That's an odd place. I mean, I think it's going to be great. We love Asheville. But yeah, it's what I know that had been rumored for a while, but it's just a kind of a random place.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see. I bet we'll hear from Dave Odom, perhaps on the pod at some point. How much of the Maui are they going to try to preserve?
Ooh, yeah.
Are we actually going full Maui Invitational, but it's in Asheville? Or are we acknowledging, okay, guys, we're in Asheville?
Yeah.
Are the coaches going to wear Hawaiian shirts? Can I wear Hawaiian shirts?
Are there giant surfboards?
Right.
I don't know.
I think these are probably all the details that are being worked out now. Yeah. Well,
these are clearly the most important details.
I also like how the Maui Invitational said Stanford was playing. Meanwhile, Stanford said they weren't playing anything till January 1st.
Someone will be there.
Yeah, wearing Stanford uniforms.
Maybe Stanford.
Right.
Hey, there's more to Pinehurst than just Donald Ross's masterpiece, Pinehurst number 2. Gil Hand's stunning redesign of Pinehurst number 4. There's the Cradle. There's the stylish North and South Bar. There is the Pinehurst Brewing Company. There has never been more to discover at the Cradle of American Golf than right now. Go to pinehurst.com and plan your visit. Okay, to bring us home today, Adam, we have a story time. So, our good friend, Mr. Goose Honkers, has been hibernating for a while, but we're going to allow him to come stretch his wings and soar. All right, our story today comes from Chad Austin, and Chad's story starts like this. On an unseasonably warm late October afternoon in 1992, an ascending Carolina football program secured a 26-14 breakthrough win against nationally ranked Georgia Tech in Keenan Stadium. Chad was a freshman at UNC that fall and in the stands that day to witness a defining win that propelled the Heels back onto the national scene and into the top 25, where they would remain a fixture during Mac Brown's first tour of duty at Carolina. On that day, the homecoming crown of Chapel Hill celebrated this rite of Carolina football passage like fans would in Ann Arbor, South Bend, or Tuscaloosa by tearing down the goalpost for the first time in program history. Is that true? It was the first time the goalpost ever went down?
Wasn't this in the cycle where Carolina beat Georgia Tech and then beat Virginia the next week?
Yeah. Yes.
And they came down both weeks.
Yes.
But in my mind, Virginia came first. But that's not what Chad said, and I believe him.
2 years and many Carolina football wins later, Chad found himself as a Cub reporter on the sports desk of the Daily Tar Heel. Midway through the 1994 season, Chad secured a particularly plum assignment to cover a scheduled appearance by Mac Brown in the Pit, the heart of campus, prior to that week's homecoming game against none other than Georgia Tech. Part pep talk, part Q&A, Brown was at his affable and charismatic best, which is what I say about Adam a lot, during this informal, unscripted talk with students. With the Yellow Jackets coming to town, Brown recounted how recent games against Tech during his tenure had resulted in some signature moments for his program. Like 1990, when the Heels put the only blemish on the Jackets' record with a 13-13 tie in Chapel Hill against a team that would go on to earn a share of the national title, and like the aforementioned 1992 win that brought the goalpost down in Keenan for the first time. Looking ahead to that week's game, Brown said in a tongue-in-cheek manner, if you want to do that again, that's fine. Go ahead and tear them down, and I'll try to help you. I had a lot of fun watching you tear them down, and I'm too old to tear them down, or I'd be there with you. I immediately thought, what a great quote for my story, said Chad. However, at that point in my young journalistic career, Chad had not yet mastered the fine art of conveying humor or jesting through the written word, something Adam still is working on to this day. But I had learned enough in my news writing and reporting classes, as well as other daily Tar Heel assignments, to know that Brown's quote was too good not to include in the article. So Chad filed his story, reviewed it with his editors, and read it in print the next morning. Although I had covered Brown's chat with students earlier in the week, Chad was not assigned to cover the game, so he watched from the stands instead of the press box. The 14th-ranked Tar Heels struggled all afternoon against a Tech team that came into the game with just one win, UNC needing a tie-breaking touchdown with 2.5 minutes left and a subsequent defensive stop to squeak out a 31-24 victory over the Jackets. As I was making my way toward the Keenan Stadium exit at game's end, some commotion near the field captured my attention, and sure enough, a contingent of a few hundred students who had apparently been reading the Daily Tar Heel that week, eluded security personnel, worked their way onto the field, and brought down the goal post once again. As one might expect, the postgame celebration resulted in some follow-up questions and media coverage, especially on campus. And at his regularly scheduled press conference the following week, Brown was asked about his comments in the chat with students from the week prior, in the article published in the Daily Tar Heel the following day. Brown denied encouraging students to tear down the goalpost, saying his remarks had been misconstrued. So although it's been more than 25 years since these events occurred, Chad learned a couple of lessons back then that stick with him still today as he continues to work in the media business, albeit now on the PR side of the fence. First, Adam, as we've said before here on this podcast, never underestimate the proverbial power of the press. And second, when communicating, and especially when writing, make sure your audience clearly knows and understands whenever you're using humor, irony, or sarcasm. In short, make sure the overarching point of your story doesn't get misconstrued. And Chad actually sent us some very helpful attachments, too. Some pictures and also links to his story.
Well, and Chad has a picture of that day that Mac Brown addressed the students featuring Chad.
Yeah.
I would say front and center, but he's more front and kind of off to the right.
I will say, I think this, it seems to me, Adam, that this moment in time has impacted Chad.
I agree. I think that's right. I think that's why this is something that young journalists can remember. This is why when you're just joshing in your writing, you put the little winky face in there, in your copy, so that everyone understands that you're just kidding around. And you don't really want the students to go tear the goalpost down.
Adam, anything else?
No, I don't think so. Boy, this pod ended up with a lot of things in it. It really rose from the ashes and became something. I'm proud of it.
Okay, so we're back later this week. Video pod on Thursday, too.
Feel good about that.
Yep. We're going to have triple guests on Friday. Already know that. We're going to settle a long, festering debate on Friday. So just buckle up. Plus, I get a five. I'm going to 5-second challenge Adam into submission.
I approach mine as being very collaborative, whereas I feel like yours is a little more battle ready.
But for now, we're going to let Bubba Cunningham, Bryn Renner, and the RZA get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
Hi, it's Bubba Cunningham, and I can just say, see you later, Big Grits.
I'm Bryn Renner. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. For dinner.
sugar in a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meals served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding right your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.